Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of Mindful Conversations. My name's Shamash. I'm again with my good friend Calvin. And today's episode's called Resurrection to Discover Your Power, Post-Traumatic Growth, and the Transcendent Self. So there's lots there. And I always like to ask Calvin to start with, how does this all link to the hero's journey, the idea of storytelling and linking it to films like The Matrix or Lord of the Rings, for example?
Yeah, so we are very close now, actually, in this phase of the hero's journey to returning to our home where we originally started. When we left the ordinary world and we're coming back to the ordinary world, but there is one last final big challenge where we experience a rebirth, a kind of emerging from the final battle, completely cleansed of our demons, if you like, for this phase of the journey or this cycle of the hero's journey, and we are reborn.
Because there's this sense of, you know, starting from the ordinary world, going into a special world where there's all this transformation happening. Are we on that boundary, or are we stepping back into the ordinary world as such, but in a transformed state?
Yeah, so we're basically moving back into the ordinary world now. And after the last episode, we were being chased essentially across the threshold, if you like, back into the ordinary world, still being challenged. And we need this determination to see ourselves through. And then as we really face this final challenge, before we are reborn, then we discover this ultimate cleansing or power that we finally reach this level of success and we can move back into home now, back into the home straight with this new embedded power.
And so in the movie, like The Matrix, Neo is, he's got his amazing skills. He's discovered that he's the one.
Yep.
And he's stepping back into his normal everyday life, doing his laundry, washing the dishes.
Exactly.
Except he doesn't have to touch it. He can just use his special powers.
And he's just waiting for the next message on his computer to say, follow the rabbit. And, you know, and this time, obviously, the rabbit's going to be bigger and, you know, uglier and everything else. And then he'll do the hero's journey all over again.
Weirdly, a weird metaphor that's coming to my mind right now is the moment when I got a smartphone, and the first time they had those maps where you can actually see your location. And I remember up to that point, I was quite often completely lost with, you know, using different maps and getting lost all over the place. But once I got that, it really made a big difference in my life. But at the same time, I was in the ordinary world. I was living in the same place as I was before, going to the same places that I need to, maybe some new places. But there was a total transformation in the way that I could navigate myself around the world. Maybe it's a little bit like that. There's a sense of, there's a transformation. We're discovering who we truly are, maybe linking up to our transcendent self. But at the same time, the challenges we need to face and navigate are of the same nature. Anyway, let's dive in with our wonderful experts to see what they have to say. And we're going to start with Dr. Vicky Barnes, who's a positive psychologist. And we asked her actually about this moment of transformation and the idea of post-traumatic growth as well, which is a key part of positive psychology.
Absolutely, I think it does. I think, you know, positive psychology has this component, which is post-traumatic growth, right? Going through these dark times, dark nights of the soul, you know, people have all kinds of different lovely creative names for it, are transformational if you're willing to and able to grow through them. If you've got the right resources and the right support and you're in the kind of headspace that you can, it can be absolutely amazing and a great springboard from which you change your life in a positive direction. I don't believe that any emotions are negative. I've just finished writing this. Well, I'm still just doing the final edits to my book now, and I'm intrigued as to what people are going to make of some of the chapters, because I talk about things like shame and guilt and regret as actually being quite nice. Not a nice feeling, but they are emotions that serve a purpose, and good things do come out of them. I don't think it's bad to have regrets. I'm going to put that out there.
Hopefully you won't regret it. Or maybe it'll be a good thing.
Exactly.
If an emotion has evolved in us human beings or even in animals, there's got to be a reason for it. Otherwise, why would it be there? Is that part of your thinking behind
That's what I mean. There's got to be a reason. Well, I think there is a reason for it. And I also think there's always something good that can come out of it. If you were to go through something in life and somebody said to you, that experience will do you no good, it will only do you harm, you can't learn anything from it, and there was no reason for you going through it, that would feel awful, right? So there's always got to be, there's got to be something good. There's got to be something positive. I mean, it doesn't come naturally, it doesn't come immediately. But in the end, if you go through something, it would be awful, I think, to feel like you can learn nothing from that. And that's just a really dark space that is a void that can never be filled with anything, with any more light. There's got to be something more than that to every negative emotion.
Wow, that was really wonderful and fascinating insights from Dr. Vicky Barnes. And you wouldn't think something like positive psychology, because it sounds like it's all about positivity and thinking positive and stuff. But actually, the idea of post-traumatic growth, the fact that we do experience traumas, and the idea of emotions not necessarily categorizing them as negative and positive and having value in that is really great. And it's something that actors very much sees emotions and the other experiences. We need to be very careful when we start to put them into negative and positives. And what comes to mind is when we feel an emotion like we go through something difficult, we experience a loss, for example, a traumatic experience, and when we feel sad. And is that a bad thing? Is that a negative thing? Surely it's a natural thing. But our minds, our problem-solving minds, jump in and say, oh, this is a bad thing. We shouldn't be feeling this way after a certain number of weeks. What's wrong with me? How do I fix this? And what happens is that we get these negative feedback loops. So you start feeling sad about feeling sad. You start feeling anxious about feeling anxious. And so they kind of artificial loops that strengthen that emotion, and we kind of get caught up in it.
So if we're caught up in this loop of thoughts and feelings at the same time, that we feel like, oh, I'm trapped in this cycle of sadness or trapped in this cycle of despair, how do we create the space in order to actually see that in the first place?
And that links beautifully with the other kind of element that we're talking about in this episode, transcendent self. You can call it transcendent self, you can call it the witnessing self, the observing self. But in our normal Western culture, we don't have a good word to describe that part of us that watches and experiences thoughts and emotions. You know, we've got our physical bodily self, we've got our thinking self, or we could even say our feeling self. But this observing self. So the very fact to actually notice that, hang on a minute, there's a part of me that observes this and witnesses this. I think that's one step in that direction of creating space. So rather than saying or noticing when our mind says, I am depressed or I am anxious, to say, I'm having this experience of sadness, or I'm feeling anxious right now, or I'm noticing I'm feeling anxious. So although language can get us into these self-amplifying loops, we can actually skillfully use a little bit of language to create some space. And that's one thing that we're doing in ACT, I believe. So stepping back, slowing down a bit, having the courage to feel it within our body. So you could feel an emotion in a certain part of your body. And as soon as you do that, you're cultivating mindfulness, but you're also creating some space there between you and the feeling. Like if there's a tightness in your stomach or something linked with this feeling, and suddenly you're listening to this podcast with these two people saying that actually maybe rather than avoiding it, you should maybe try something different to actually feel it. And that's a counterintuitive, because your mind says, what if you feel it, it's going to get worse and worse. But actually we're saying, actually try something different. Step back, observe it, feel it. That's starting to create some space there. And I know that you've had this experience and you've learned about mindfulness and you've tried these approaches. So yeah, they do work, don't they? You think it makes it worse, but actually it really helps to create space and gives us some inner freedom, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And it helps with shifting perspective as well. One of the things that we are able to do is once we step back from the thought, like you said, we then have this element of curiosity that is like, oh, what is that?
Yeah.
Or oh, I never saw that or felt that before. I never felt that or sensed that or realized that, whichever experience it might be. And I think that's one of the beautiful parts about the space. So yeah, thank you for sharing. Mm. Let's hear what Dr. Maywa Sharif has to say about this experience of post-traumatic growth.
I think at the moment, this is really the apt time to talk about post-traumatic growth because of the pandemic and the extreme trauma that everybody's probably experienced, loss of varying degrees and varying forms. And that loss, I think, will carry forward. And I think this is really the time to be talking about that sort of post-traumatic growth. So I guess in the beginning, it will be searching for that meaning. And I'm going to go back to the rainbows. Rainbows are different for all of us. We have different concepts and we might attribute it to a film or a song or pot of gold at the end of the rainbow or just being curious about where this rainbow comes from and where it goes. I just feel like they are a really good way to explore the meaning of life because of the spectrum of colors. And don't we see a spectrum of colors through life and through our life journeys? And don't we all meet somewhere in life in that journey? And we can all see this rainbow in the same way. And something about rainbows are that they're very fleeting. You see it one for a couple of seconds and then it's gone. And another one of my poems was about rainbows are fleeting, not easy to hold. So seek all the colors and take them inbound. So that was in the words of the poem, but that was the concept that, okay, well, yes, we're seeing this for a minute. There's a miracle there. But why can't we take those colors and why can't we take all that emotion and everything that we want to and absorb it within us and carry it with us?
I love rainbows. I'm a big fan of rainbows. whenever it rains, I'm usually like, okay, the sun's in that angle and it comes up in the east. It goes down. Where would the rainbow be? I'm usually looking for them. I love it. And I think it's a great metaphor that Dr. Maywa kind of touched upon there. One thing that comes to mind with rainbows, I read a few books on ACT and they talk about how a therapist or a coach should relate to their client. One sentence that comes to mind is, don't see your clients as maths problems. See them more like rainbows. And what they mean is that we've been talking about ACT and storytelling and we've been talking about the different elements of the journey and you can start putting people into different compartments. Like, okay, this person's got the challenge with acceptance or this person needs some help linking to the transcendent self and creating space for their emotions. And this person needs to focus on their values. And it becomes more like a maths problem. And you're not really seeing the person in front of you. Mm. You can end up getting too carried away with wanting to share techniques and to helping them solve the problem that they've got. But if you see them as a rainbow isn't a problem at all. It's beautiful. It's something that comes when the sun shines at a certain angle and it's been raining and it's miraculous. And you can almost guarantee that the words people are going to say when they see an amazing rainbow is, wow.
Yeah.
Your thinking mind stops for a while and you connect and you're really mindful and present. Pretty much everyone has that experience. So that's another kind of element that comes to mind of ACT. And I know there are some therapists and coaches, other practitioners listening. And that might resonate. I know it resonated for me to not see our clients or anyone that we work with as a problem to be solved as such, even if they are going through their difficulties. But actually, it's a human being here. And just like you, they go through the same challenges as everyone else. How can we be really present to them? How can we be compassionate in the way that we're listening? And how can we create a space to help support before we start diving in with giving solutions?
Do you know there's an image just running through my mind as you're speaking, and it's getting out a paintbrush instead of a calculator. You know, it's that that artist, and that's one of the things that really struck me having heard that, and reminded me, of course, of something I heard. There's a woman called Jill Bolte Taylor who had a stroke many years ago, and her entire left hemisphere died, and she only had the right hemisphere left, and she experienced this kind of transcendence while she was in hospital. And if anybody wants to look it up, you can. She did a fantastic TED talk called Stroke of Insight. But she talks about experiencing actually a level of transcendence where there was no boundary between her and anybody else or anything else for that matter, almost a kind of oneness. So I just have this kind of connection between the artist and seeing the rainbow and this lack of boundary, this common humanity that you referred to as being really different from this logical, technical and measuring tape kind of approach, which is really helpful for developing alternative perspectives, or maybe even enhancing existing perspectives too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now I think that might have been one of the first TED Talks I saw, actually, her TED Talk. It was really popular when it first came out. And it's coming quite strongly in my mind. The idea of when that left hemisphere, that part of our mind that's always labeling and categorizing, when that doesn't have the option and it just shuts down. She had a really transcendent experience. But another thing that comes to mind, in the early development of ACT, although ACT is very science-based, the first paper that Dr. Stephen Hayes wrote was actually called Making Sense of Spirituality. And he did some research about insights and transcendence. And people thought that the kind of experience that Jill Bolte Taylor had, that transcendent experience, they thought it was a 1 in 1 million or 1 in 10 million people. And then they started researching and asking people more and more. And it turns out it's really common, like maybe 1 in 3 people. I can't remember the exact number, but it's very common. It's almost, you can almost call it normal for a human being to experience a moment of transcendence or connecting to their transcendent self beyond this sense of separation that we have in our normal everyday life. Cool. Well, next up we asked therapist Murray Williams about all these different ideas to do with post-traumatic growth. And here's what she had to say.
I think we're growing all the time. I think, you know, each and every day, I know in my life, sometimes it's a conversation I've had with someone on a bus, you know, that has been the most impactful conversation I've ever had. You know? So I think trauma is always going to happen to us. Most of us are going to have something traumatic happen in life. So again, I think it's something we should just be normalizing, not as in accepting, but normalizing as this is probably going to happen. Let's learn how to deal with it. So I think that's the other thing. But I think post-traumatic growth is how you, again, it's back to challenge. How are you going to come out of it? What have you learned? So I always say to people, yeah, sometimes we need to kind of do some unconscious stuff to unwind that kind of protective mechanism. So client I've been working with recently has a protective mechanism that stops us sleeping. And so we're unwinding why that happened. But what did you actually learn from all of that stuff? I've got other clients who've done stuff that they're not proud of. I'm looking back, you know, some quite serious stuff. And I'm like, okay, but what did that teach you about who you are now? Would you have learned that lesson had you not gone through that? Okay, that wasn't great. I don't agree with what you did either, but you did. And we're sitting here having this conversation because you're not that person anymore. You're not that version. You've grown from that version. So what is it now that you learned from that? It reminds me also of a story. There's a lovely woman. She was saying she had worked in a children's terminal cancer ward for about, I think, 20 years. And she said it was really interesting because the other cancer ward had things like leukemia in. She said leukemia, although awful, actually you tend to go through and you survive and it kind of becomes a blip on your child's life. But she said, obviously, where your child's not surviving, it's not. And she said it was a really interesting thing to see some parents. And she said it was often the terminally ill parents, she said, who actually got through it better than the parents whose kids had got leukemia. And she said, you wouldn't think that at all. And she said it was because those parents learned to hold juxtaposition. In one hand, my child is dying. This is the worst thing that is ever going to happen to me in my whole life. And in the other hand, we are going to grow from this as a family. And she said it was the families that could negotiate that, that actually this has brought us together. It's made us more powerful. It's brought the siblings together. It's had this beautiful growth in it. And yet it's going to be devastating. And for me, that was so powerful. And I definitely felt that changed my life hearing that story. And it's something I've passed on to other clients. It's okay for you to be where you are right now and go, this is awful. I can grow from it. And I think if you're going to go through stuff anyway, if you have to, if you don't choose to go through this stuff, why not grow from it?
Why not grow from it? I really felt that was a powerful piece from Mary. What she expressed was, for me, there's this kind of, we talked about the transcendent self now a bit. And this seems to be a common thread, Shamash, for me weaving through this, because when we're able to rise from a challenge, I almost visualize going upwards in a building to the 100th floor or something, where we're so far removed from this problem on the ground level that we can see it in its totality, that we can rise above it. And there's something really nice and simple about that concept of rising above the challenge and finding this kind of these patterns, or seeing these patterns from that distance.
In all the little stories that we're hearing today, they're challenges, really difficult challenges that people are facing. And if there's a way to get out of it where that challenge isn't there, then let's do it. But the stories, some of them that Murray's shared there, you don't have a choice. You're stuck in this situation. So what do you do? you can't exactly see the bright side of it straight away. But on reflection, when we step back and say, okay, what has come out from this? How can I see this? And you're mentioning rising above. It's about perspective shift, as you said earlier. And in fact, that part of the ACT model to do with the transcendent self is also called the perspective taking self. So it's about being able to see things from a different perspective. And the three different perspectives that they've found creates these shifts is a different perspective of time, a different perspective of place, or person. So one way to have a different perspective is to imagine a few years into the future. So your future self, what would that future self say to you at this time? That can help to create some insight. Another one would be place. So just stepping out from yourself and seeing things from the bigger picture or rising up, like you said, that can help to give a different perspective and a different insight. And the third one is a different person. So you can actually imagine what would a wise person say to you, or a kind person, someone who comes to mind. You can almost step into their shoes and imagine your situation from their perspective. And again, you're stepping out from yourself. There's a transcendent element to this, and it leads to some insights. So maybe this post-traumatic growth is linked to this perspective taking in a really fundamental way. And that helps to create meaning and purpose as well. And talking about perspective shifting, here's what Kush Kanodia, social entrepreneur, had to say about this whole idea of post-traumatic growth.
The kind of the aspect of post-traumatic growth, to me, again, when a person's life has been shattered by life events, so it's that breaking of everything one knows, but then you can have a process of coming back together and more beautiful than it was. So you have that phrase in Japan about golden joinery, as I call it, kintsugi, or I can't even pronounce it properly, but I think that's the key element of post-traumatic growth. Again, like if you look at Thich Nhat Hanh and Plum Village, he has a really beautiful saying, no mud, no lotus. So sometimes you need to have that trauma to go through the growth, you know, a similar way to a caterpillar to a butterfly. So when I look back now at some of the most traumatic experiences in my life, I actually try to relabel and realign them to the most transformative experiences in one's life. And like sometimes it's weird, you know, so when somebody is losing their job at that particular time, it can be a very traumatic experience. When a person's going through a very major surgery, it can be a very traumatic experience. And that is generally the experience at that time. But when a person reflects back, then actually a person realizes that maybe it was the most transformative experience, because maybe that helped a person to change jobs where they're more aligned to their purpose. Maybe that helped the person to actually overcome things that they weren't able to overcome before. So you go through these emotions that shatter, and then you can rebuild back to something more beautiful and stronger than it was before. And I think that's the beautiful thing about transformation from post-trauma.
So interestingly, Kush talked a lot in that piece about reframing things and this sense of breaking down and then rebuilding it with more purpose. And I think that's a fundamental aspect in this part of the hero's journey, this sense of resurrection, this sense of breaking down. And I think that breaking down is almost like a breaking down of the ego. So thinking from a different perspective, our sense of who we are or the story we tell ourselves, we hold this one story in our minds and then we face difficulties in life, we face challenges. And that inner story we have about who we are, what we can manage, what we can cope with, gets challenged so much, it gets totally shattered. And we think we're shattered, but actually, it's part of who we think we are. It's part of our old story. And rather than dying in that sense, metaphorically, there's this, yeah, we call it rising up from the ashes, but it's actually discovering a different story, or realizing even at a deeper level that these are just stories about who we are. It's not our true sense of self.
You talked about identity and who we think we are. It literally just popped into my head. I was out walking recently with a friend, and my friend was talking about his partner, their marriage, and he said, I don't know if they're the same person anymore. And I thought, that's fascinating. Wow. In my head, of course. And then I asked, are you the same person? And this idea that actually this person that we define is fixed in time, is like a statue, is quite illusory in itself. So we then almost get attached to the ideas of who we think people are as well. And being able to break that down and reconstruct that really chimes for me as part of the resurrection.
And this idea, the fortunate thing is that it's not who we are. Like when we say the person's changed, they have changed, but there is a part of them that's the same person. We're referring to the same person. The transcendent self is the same. The observing self is the same. But within that container, there's a change. And so when we've done things like mindful practices and you've had the chance to step into this, even if you've had this tiny glimpse that you're not just your thoughts, you're not just your feelings, there is this part of you that can watch them coming and going. They change a lot. You realize the thoughts are very transitory and we don't start to cling to them so much. And so maybe we don't need to go through so much of that trauma because there's a little bit of more of an ability to step back and to observe and let things come and go.
Yeah.
Now, we had the fortune of speaking to Dr. Stephen Hayes. And as we're coming towards the end of this particular series on ACT and mindful storytelling, I wanted to share a little bit more about what Dr. Hayes had to say about the whole model of ACT and how it comes together. And so I asked him a few questions about this, and this is what he had to share. And he also talks about the noise. When he mentions noise, he's talking about his personal experience of tinnitus. We've touched on this in previous episodes where he was so overwhelmed with his tinnitus that, you know, he had a suicidal thought. And it was at that point he realized, hang on a minute, why don't I apply my life's work, ACT, and what I've learned about ACT to this personal experience of tinnitus?
That's one of six. And in that one, it's attention. And you know, there's a yearning underneath attention, which is basically to be oriented. You know, what's going on? What's going on? And the mind, which is this evolutionary recent thing, it's only a couple hundred thousand or 2 million years old, your basic physiology, and then you're learning by association, that's half a billion years or older, right? So it's thousands of times old. And so the mind thinks it knows everything, but it's the new kid on the block. And it'll say, oh, well, I know what to do. You should get rid of that noise. Just get rid of the noise. Well, that'd be fine if there's some magic pill or something. The audiologists don't have them. There's no safe operation. Blah, blah, blah. Of course, I was just going to say, well, if you do this brain stimulation or something, oh, fine. Well, go for it. You go for it. But I've got a better solution to it. I applied it in about an hour of a walk and then a couple of days, which is I am letting go of any interest in noise. Sometimes acceptance, which means to receive, as if to receive the gift. Like here, would you accept this? You say, when you give a precious gift to somebody, that's the kind of acceptance we're talking about. Sometimes with things like anxiety, sadness, etc., it's really a precious gift of your history. Sometimes with things like ringing in your ears, it's a gift of your history, but I've learned that next lifetime, I won't stand in front of 50-foot tall speakers and listen to folks shriek like aircraft engines. But, you know, I'm watching the kids with their little phones in their ears and say, I'm just saying, you know, when you're my age, you're going to hear 24/7. But they're kids. They're stupid. They don't know.
Yeah.
They'll learn that later. And it turns out some of these things, like past abuse history, there's some real things to learn in there. And then the learning is finished. There's no three lines that will remove that from your history. Those dots can be seen and learned from. And then the next thing is, what do I do with that? So that's what's inside ACT, is a combination of learning to open up to your thoughts and feelings in a new way, to come into the present moment from this perspective taking, witnessing, I hear now, pure awareness, not even aware of anything, but just pure awareness, more spiritual side of you, that combination of being here as a whole human being in the now, letting go of the mind's invitation to be here only when you can ruminate and worry enough that you know exactly where in the trajectory of events you are. No, just be here now. You can notice your worries, notice your rumination. Maybe there's something in there to learn from. Usually not. And then once you're here now, let's allocate your attention flexibly, fluidly, and voluntarily towards what? Towards what are the qualities of this next moment that you want to put into your actual behavior. Like, what do you want to reflect? Who do you want to be? That's maybe one to say it. Not who do you want to be, like the storied self, like, I am a man wearing this suit. Not like that. I mean, what journey are you on? And what is the next step? And if you do that, you begin to get habits of mind that are values-based, so that even when you're mindless, your kind of habits are helping you instead of hurting you. And you bring along with you those painful and joyful. Turns out non-acceptance predicts not only that you run from pain. We've done the studies to show you run from joy too. Mm-hmm. Isn't that sad? Mm. You have to run from your feelings since they come as a package. Mm. You have to run from both. Mm. It's the happy numb, except numb's not happy. Mm. Yeah. So instead, can we find a way to bring all these little passengers coming along on our little bus that we're driving, sweet, sad, and indifferent, and then focus on the road? Where am I going? Focus on the direction. How am I going to get there? What's this next turn? And build out a life worth living in that one step at a time way. So that's what's in the book, is okay. These six pivots. They're easy to learn. You can remember six things.
Yeah.
And it right inside your pain is a yearning for something that will build your sense of happiness and joy and connection to your life. And I try to walk people through that in the book, and really simple techniques you can practice. And see yourself, not just because of my story or the science story, but very quickly, I mean, in a matter of days, you can see yourself.
Wow, there's so much there. You may want to re-listen to that in slow motion almost.
Rewind.
Rewind and play in slow motion to hear. Oh, there's just rich, every sentence that they shared, there's rich with insights. So much we can discuss and explore here. But one of the things that they touched on earlier on is this idea of the mind as being quite a modern invention, a couple of hundred years, up to 2 billion years old, compared to evolution being way, way longer than that of animals. And how, because of that, it's almost not our fault. I think first insight we can have from there, the fact that if you feel overwhelmed with sadness or anxiety or shame, or you feel that there's something wrong with you in terms of your mind, the fact that it's so new and it's almost not functioning properly, in the sense of we're trying to do our normal everyday approach to trying to fix ourselves and it's not working. For some reason, compassion comes to mind, the importance of being compassionate to ourselves. And the other thing that I really want to pull out is what you talked about, pure awareness, the value of stepping out from this constant stream of thinking. It's not going to stop, unfortunately. It may slow down a little bit, but it's not going to stop. So having this attitude of stepping back, being the observing self, the pure witness part of ourselves, and letting the, however negative or positive the thoughts are, however so-called negative or positive those emotions are, and seeing things from that different perspective. When we start to go down this route of trying to fix our emotions, rather than us stopping to feel anxiety or sadness, we actually end up running away from both. We'd start numbing ourselves, not only from so-called negative emotions, but we stop feeling the happiness as well. The positive emotions, they go hand in hand.
He actually said these feelings come as a package, right? And it got me thinking, you know, there's an expression, there's two sides of the same coin. It got me thinking, like, if somebody offered you 50 pence, would you just say, can I just have one side, please? You know, you have to take the whole 50p in order for that to be of any value to you. So when he said that, it was just like, literally the penny dropped, you know? Well, yeah, so that really resonated for me in a big way. And it's really, I think, encapsulates this beautiful idea of the resurrection on the hero's journey. This, not just this waking up, but this recognition of awareness that sits outside of the emotional experience.
So what's coming up? We're almost at the last episode now, aren't we?
One more episode to go. We'll return with the elixir. So we're still on the journey. You remember the hero's journey doesn't ever stop. But now we're back home, back in our ordinary world. But things don't look so ordinary anymore because we've made all of these discoveries. And hopefully, if you've been listening to this show, maybe some of these things resonated with you that you heard. Perhaps you've learned something new. And if you have, please do leave us a review, ask some more questions, share anything on any of our podcast channels. And we look forward to coming back to you in our final episode, where Shamash and I will be discussing Return with the Elixir and recapping of the entire podcast.
See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye for now.